Right, let's see how many we got this week. One, two, three. There's three of you. The numbers have gone up by 50%. Fantastic. Nice to have you here. What's that? The Total Christmas Podcast. No, don't go. We talk about Christmas. It's really good. Oh, come on. Get back here. Oh. Okay, what have we got? One, two. Okay, fine. Let's just run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. It's so good to be here and it's so good to have you here. I hope you're having a wonderful Christmas. Obviously, it's not Christmas at the moment, but I hope you're having a wonderful Christmas. I don't think I've got anything to cover. Oh, there is one thing, actually. You remember in the last episode, we discussed the Patrick Stewart version of A Christmas Carol, and I talked about the chap that played the Ghost of Christmas Past. He was an actor called Joel Grey, and he was actually the only non-British actor to be in the film, actually. So there you go, learned something there. And I said I didn't know much about him, apart from the fact he'd won an Oscar for being in Cabaret. Well, I got an email from Ed Daly and another email from Mary Pulte telling me that Joel Grey was Jennifer Grey's dad. So, yeah, I'm annoyed at myself for not knowing that. Yeah, you know Jennifer Grey. She was in Dirty Dancing. That's pretty much her main one. She was also Ferris Bueller's sister as well. Recently, she's been in a few Christmas films. Yeah, barely recognisable. She hadn't aged much, but she does look completely different. I think you know what I'm saying there. So there you go. Sorry I missed that, but thank you so much to Ed and Mary for pointing that out so I could share it with you guys. So yeah, let's just start the show, I guess, with this. This episode's Santa Claus is Not Coming to Town comes from our listener Travis. I can't tell you his surname because he's so ashamed of listening to the podcast. He's worried that people might find out who he is. And they'll be like, why is he listening to this trolley? So his name's just Travis, like the band Travis. No surname that I'm allowed to tell you anyway. So this is what he put. I wanted to share my story of how I learned the truth about Santa. I don't remember my exact age, but I think I must have been about 8 years old. My family decided it would be a great idea to spend Christmas up at the local ski resort. It was a few hours drive, and so my parents had to get everything ready for Christmas a few days early so they could load it up into our van. They didn't want to forget anything because that meant almost 8 hours of driving for whoever had the unlucky job of collecting any forgotten items. So, my parents loaded up Christmas decorations, a small Christmas tree, stockings, presents and luggage, and all of this was strewn across the entrance of our house before we left for our holiday. Now, my parents always told us that Santa would leave one special gift for us under the tree on Christmas Eve and that the others were from family. So I assumed all the gifts that were in the entrance were from family and I wanted to see which ones were for me. I began poking through the gifts and reading the tags until I came across one gift tag that read, "To Travis from Santa." That's it, isn't it? There you go. It's like, well, why did Santa put the present there? Oh, I get it. Oh. But he's put, I think I already had my doubts about Santa. So after I read that, the illusion was crushed. However, I didn't tell anyone and continued to assure my parents, aunts and uncles that I believed in Santa until I was 11. Christmas was always, I wonder what happened when he was 11. He's like, right, I'm 11 now. I don't believe in that trolley anymore. I'm a grown up now. I'm 11 years old. Give me a beer. I don't believe in Santa. Anyway, sorry. Christmas was always very special for me, and my mum kept up the magic of Santa for a long time, even if everyone knew the truth. It wasn't until I was at university that I saw my mum fill my stocking one Christmas Eve. I asked her what she was doing, and she told me I was old enough, and it was late enough, and she wanted to go to bed. I love that. That's fantastic. It's like, look, son, you know it's me. There's no illusion anymore. I don't have to wait till you go to bed. There's your presents. Just pretend they're from Santa. I'm going to bed. I'm tired. It's Christmas Eve. Fantastic. Do you know what that reminds me, actually? When I was a kid, now, say I was a kid, I might have been early teens. I don't know when my mum stopped giving us a stocking, actually. I don't know if I was in my teens or what it was. When she, you know, because I think we knew it was her, but she'd still leave the presents. I remember one year being in bed and hearing her come in, and it sort of was a bit... I didn't sort of go, oh, what are you doing, mum? You know, I just sort of laid there thinking, oh... Even though the magic was already dead, it was sort of even more dead that it actually, I was there and witnessed it, you know. Funny. Anyway, sorry. And then he's put, right, another thing. Are you still offering Christmas pickles? I might just be eager enough to record a new story of Christmas shame if there is a pickle as a prize. Well, yes, Travis, I am. I actually have one left from the original batch. I will be making some more if that one ever goes. It's been there a little while. But yes, I am still offering Christmas pickles. So not just Travis, but any of you out there, if you want to send in a story, you've got to record it. You can't just email it. And if you want to email it in, I'll read it out. But if you record it yourself, you get the pickle. Send me your address and you'll get a sticker as well. I don't go on about the stickers, but yeah, you get a sticker as well. So, you know, I'm a great guy. Finally, Travis has given me a few things to look into, which I will be covering some of them in later episodes. But right now, I want to say a bit... Oh, actually, one other thing is one for you. So Travis was all interested in my Batman film. He's a big Batman fan, big superhero fan. And I emailed him the links to the clips of my Batman film. And I've heard very little back, which once again suggests... That's another person that thinks my whole Batman thing is a load of trolley, which is a shame. But, you know, that's life, I guess. Anyway, thanks for sending that through, Travis. I do appreciate it. Record your other story, send that through, and get yourself a pickle. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Boys and girls, now we have the first of our segments from Bob Baker, the podcast Self-Appointed Barman, and this segment is bloody good.
I quit drinking for dry January, but today I am celebrating my comeback. I told my wife not to drink to forget me. She'll just end up seeing me double. So this year, there was a new Christmas horror film. And no, I'm not talking about the more publicized Violent Night with David Harbour. There was another low-budget one called Christmas Bloody Christmas. You know, it was the standard holiday fare. The military-industrial complex creates a killer robot Santa. The robotic Santa Claus goes haywire and begins a rampant killing spree throughout a small town. The movie is just what you'd expect, but I was more interested in the title. It is perfect for Do You Hear What I Hear? Christmas Bloody Christmas utilizes bloody both the way we use it in America, meaning covered in blood or homicidal killings or death, and bloody as the English do, where it simply means to add an excited punctuation to your sentence. Like saying, really, or very. You love how the Brits can give it different interpretations just with the tone of their voice. Like when they use it in anger, bloody disaster. Or when they're excited, bloody brilliant. Or just as a frustrated or exhausted curse word, like you're a bloody arse. It has no relation to blood or murder at all. And has no connection to slashing or terror. Which you realize when you watch UK holiday specials or films and hear the phrase, Merry Bloody Christmas, quite often. Again, this does not mean there will be a family slaying at the dinner table. Now, I must admit that I have started 2023 with another crude reference on our Happy Little Christmas show. From the 1700s until the 1920s, the use of this term in England was considered to be obscene. In fact, saying the word bloody was somewhat controversial in low class until the 1960s. And even today, it is still considered a profanity, although a mild one. I apologize. I am so bloody ashamed of myself. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Well, thanks very much for that, Bob. I find that interesting, actually, because when I was a kid, bloody was quite a bad swear word. My mum hardly ever used to swear, but if she did, she'd never use any of the really bad ones, but she would say bloody if she was really angry. And I always thought it was a religious swear word, because back in the like Victorian times and beyond, religious swear words were actually considered worse than sexual swear words, which is like what the big ones are these days. And I always thought it came from Blood of Christ. That's what it was, like a shortened version. And Bloomin' is what we also say in the UK. It also comes from bloody. It's literally the same word, but just a softened version, so you could get away with saying it when you couldn't get away with saying bloody. And another thing about the word bloody, I always remember when there was a TV show called Over My Dead Body, and it was Edward Woodward in the States. And if you don't know Edward Woodward, he played the Equalizer, a very famous actor. And he was like this British author living in the States, but he was also like a detective. And he kept saying bloody, and it really seemed out of place in an American TV show. And I think that's when I first became aware that it's not a word that was used in the States. So well done for pointing that one out, Bob. Really appreciate that. And thanks for your research. Bob will be back again later on in the show, but now it's time for this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, for those of you that hate the quiz, don't worry, because it's now 30% shorter, because I've got rid of the singing bit. So it's now just 10 questions, 10 answers, and then we forget about it. Move on with our lives. It's going to be wonderful. And when I say wonderful, I mean crap. Okay, get your pen and paper ready, because this is question number one. Which Portuguese explorer landed in what is now South Africa on Christmas Day 1497 and gave it the appropriate name of Natal? Because Natal means Christmas, doesn't it? Okay, any ideas on that one? No? No, I didn't think you would. No. Okay, question number two. Which rock band that formed in Sheffield in 1992 had a 2018 double album, The Story So Far, The Best Of, alongside a standalone single, We Need a Little Christmas? Sheffield band, 1992. No idea. Not doing too well so far, are we, boys and girls? Has anyone out there got any of those answers? Of course you haven't. Of course you haven't. Right, number three. In the song lyrics, not only was Mummy seen kissing Santa Claus, what else was she seen doing, the dirty girl? What was she up to? She wasn't just kissing him, was she? No, she wasn't. Right, question number three. Who wrote the book Jesus's Christmas Party? Whom? It's a kid's book. Very lovely illustrations in it. Who wrote that book? Question number five. Which American singer had the 1957 Christmas number one single with the song Mary's Boy Child? I hope you got that one. Surely you did. Okay, question number... Which now divorced Hollywood stars got married on Christmas Eve in 1990 after a whirlwind romance on the set of the film Days of Thunder? Do you see what makes that Christmassy? The fact that when they got married, that's it. That's the only thing. Really, it could be, yeah. Do you remember what Hollywood couple met on the set of Days of Thunder? Of course I do. Well, let's make that Christmassy. Oh, you know what's going on. Right, question whatever. Which supermarket's 2021 Dickensian-themed Christmas TV advert featured a banana called Ebanana Scrooge and a pea-kicking footballer named Marcus Radishford? Got that? It was a Christmas advert for a supermarket in the UK. Yeah, and it had a banana in it called Ebanana Scrooge. Right. Question something. In which 1994 film does Jim Carrey play Lloyd Christmas? That's another one, isn't it? The film has nothing to do with Christmas apart from the bloke's surname. I feel like we're sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel here, but there's still like another 900 questions in the book. Anyway, who cares? Question something. What fruit is a Christmas pippin? What fruit is it? Right. In the lyrics of Gilbert O'Sullivan's 1974 hit Christmas Song, that's what it was called, he sings, I'm not dreaming of a what? What is he not dreaming of? Right, I think that was your 10 questions. So let's get on with the answers. Question number one. So which Portuguese explorer landed in what is now South Africa on Christmas Day 1497 and gave it the appropriate name of Natal? That was Vasco da Gama, of course. I did not get that. Question number two. Which rock band that formed in Sheffield in 1992 had a 2018 double album, The Story So Far, The Best Of, alongside standalone single, We Need a Little Christmas? The answer was Def Leppard. If you got that, I am stunned for two reasons. One, they didn't form in 1992. I had to look it up. They formed in 1976. Like, the current lineup has been the same since 1992, but the band's been going since 76. And also, the song is not called We Need a Little Christmas, it's called We All Need Christmas. So, the biggest Christmas quiz book ever, by Neil Mather, has got that completely wrong. So they lose a point, but if you've got a point, congratulations. Question number three. In the song lyrics, not only was Mummy seen kissing Santa Claus, what else was she seen doing? Eh? She was tickling him. See, nothing too dirty at all, actually. Tickling him on his balls. Oh, cut that bit. I did not say that. Cut it. Cut that bit out. Right. Question number, four, is it? Who wrote the book Jesus's Christmas Party? Now, I won't lie to you, kids. I don't imagine any of you got this, and I didn't get it either. But the reason I kept this question in was because I've got that book, and I read it to the girls at least once or twice every December. And yet, I couldn't remember the answer. And the chap's name was Nicholas Allen. Tell you what, if you've got young kids, it's a lovely little book. I really recommend getting it. You know, get yourself on eBay. I'm sure you better get a cheap copy of it, or on Amazon, used copy. Lovely book, highly recommended. Jesus's Christmas Party. Brilliant. Question number something. Which American singer had the 1957 Christmas number one single with the song Mary's Boy Child? You know, Boney M did a cover. Do you know that one? I knew this one, so I would have scored at least one point. The answer was Harry Belafonte. There you go. So that was easy. Right, question number... who was it who got married on Christmas Eve? Two famous stars that met on the set of Days of Thunder. That was Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. Right. Question whatever. Which supermarket's 2021 Dickensian-themed Christmas TV advert featured a banana called Ebanana Scrooge and a pea-kicking footballer named Marcus Radishford? Now, if you're in the States, I'm not expecting you to get this, but I covered this advert in one of my versions of A Christmas Carol, not Christmas 22, Christmas 2021. So that was only a mere 13 months ago, dear listener. So you should remember that it was Aldi. Now, I hate to admit it, I think I would have put down Lidl, because they're pretty much the same, aren't they? But I think I would have got that one wrong. But it was Aldi. In which 1994 film that has nothing at all to do with Christmas does Jim Carrey play Lloyd Christmas? That was Dumb and Dumber. I would have got that one, so hooray for me. And question number, I think we're up to nine now, because I've only got two left. What fruit is a Christmas pippin? Pippin should give it away. It's a type of apple. And the last one is, in the lyrics of Gilbert O'Sullivan's 1974 hit Christmas song, he sings, I'm not dreaming of a what? Well, tell us, what aren't you dreaming of, Gilbert O'Sullivan?
I'm not dreaming of a white Christmas.
There we go. That was your 10 questions. Now, I don't know if I told you this before, boys and girls. This book has got over 1,000 questions. Well, it says it's got 1,063 questions in it. And I go through and I ignore a lot of the questions that I don't think anyone would get, or some that are just too easy. And there's one here, right? I'm going to read it out. It's not a question for you, but it's quite clever. So I thought I'd share it with you. This is the question. What line ends this comedy version of the carol We Three Kings? We four Beatles of Liverpool are Paul in a taxi, John in a car, George on a scooter, blowing his hooter, following. And the answer is, following Ringo Starr. I quite like that. I thought I'd share it with you. That wasn't the question, but yeah, I like that. Maybe I should have added it, actually, because you probably would have guessed it. Yeah, there we go. Anyway, that was this episode's quiz. I hope you enjoyed it, because I certainly didn't. Or did I? I can't remember. It was a long time ago now. Let's move on with this.
I'm singing, I'm in a store, and I'm singing. I'm in a store, and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Boys and girls, this segment of the podcast is the Christmas Not So Classic. Now, what the deal is meant to be, I pick songs that I'm familiar with that I think should get more airplay. And sometimes I play songs that I'm familiar with that I'm glad don't get any more airplay, but I like chatting about songs that are a bit, these are always a bit more obscure. Now, this song I wasn't familiar with until I started searching for obscure Christmas songs. I thought I'd have a look. for some songs that, you know, should be classics but aren't. And this isn't the one that popped up by this act. It's The Killers. And the one that popped up was actually called Don't Shoot Santa. But the song I'm going to cover this week is called A Great Big Sled. And it's fantastic. It really is. I'm sure you've heard of The Killers. They were a band from Las Vegas. They were formed originally in 2001, but I think their present lineup got together in about 2003. They're made up of Brandon Flowers. He's the front man and the lead singer. Then you've got Dave Koenig. I probably said that wrong. Ronnie Vannucci Jr. and Mark Sturmer. Probably said that wrong as well. And they're fantastic. I've always been a big fan. Their biggest hit to date is Mr. Brightside. But in the UK, they've had like 7 number one albums. I don't think they've ever had a number one single, though. I think they're more popular, despite being a US band. I think they're more popular in the UK than they are in the States. But in the States, they've done pretty well with their albums anyway. Most of their albums have hit the top 10. And in 2006, they released their first Christmas single, and this was in aid of the Red Campaign, which was a charity set up by Bono from U2. And the single came out as download only. It did okay, actually, in the UK, in the download charts, it got to number 11. In the US, on the Billboard Hot 100, it reached number 54. And every year, for 10 years, they released a Christmas single. All of them were download only. But then in 2016, they put them all together and released a compilation album called Don't Waste Your Wishes. And that had all the 10 singles they've released. And that was it. They stopped doing their Christmas singles back then. That's what would have been 6 years ago. So like I say, this was the first of those. And in my opinion, it was by far the best. They've got a couple of others that I don't mind. But this one, I just think is fantastic. And I think it really does deserve to be a classic. In fact, the first line is worth the entrance fee alone. It's fantastic. Have a listen to this.
The snowman is shaping up to be an 8, but not out of 10.
Did you hear that? The snowman is shaping up to be an 8, but not out of 10. Isn't that clever? Because snowmen are like the shape of an 8, figure 8, aren't they? But he's saying it's not an 8 out of 10 snowman. I love that line. I'll play a bit for you. Here it comes.
Now the girls up the street are innocent and sweet. Well, they're all in bed. They got their makeup and dreams of wonderland sprinkled inside their heads. And soon they will change. But tonight, Hollywood Hills never seem so strange. Their mother's praying it'll last a long time.
The song is pretty much about how great Christmas is when you're a kid, and he's talking about how, you know, Christmas is coming and all the kids are getting excited. And then the second verse talks about how when you're a bit older, you're out working and you're more jaded and Christmas isn't quite what it used to be. And the chorus says, I want to roll around like a kid in the snow. I want to relearn what I already know. Let's play the chorus for you. Here it comes.
I want to roll around like a kid in the snow. I want to relearn what I already know. Just let me take flight, dressed in red through the night.
So the lyrics obviously are Christmassy, and at the same time, you can tell it's The Killers, a band that I love listening to, but they've also added the chimes in the background there, so it actually gives the song a Christmassy feel. I can't really say much more about it, really. That's pretty much it. It was released as a download. It sort of did a bit in the charts. These days, it doesn't really get much airplay, but I think you should go out there and check it out. Certainly, give it a few listens and see how you feel about it, and then I think after you've heard the whole thing a few times through, I think you want to add it to your playlist, because I definitely am going to be adding it to my Christmas playlist this year. That's A Great Big Sled by The Killers. A Christmas not so classic that really does deserve to be a Christmas classic. Now let's do this. So if you listened last episode, you'll remember that my wife gave me a Christmas joke toilet roll. It's printed with Christmas jokes. And I read one of those jokes out. And I'll be doing the same this week. So, are you ready? This is coming from my toilet roll. Why do mummies like Christmas so much? Because of all the wrapping. That's crap, isn't it? Do you know what? I don't even feel guilty about the fact that I am definitely going to go and wipe my arse with that joke now. So I'm off to wipe my arse. Now you can go and listen to this. Bob's back while I'm off to the toilet, and he's going to be talking about how to keep Christmas alive every day. Take it away, Bob.
Hey, thanks, Jack. Another way to keep the holiday spirit alive is to read Christmas-themed books all year round. It is a nice way to enjoy some private merriment during those bleak spring and summer months when the Yuletide just seems so far away. Say when it's pouring rain in April, or sweltering heat in July, you just step into one of these stories and get lost in some of that wintry Christmas joy, even when you're sweating buckets. What is better than bringing a little more love, family, and Christmas into your mundane, everyday life? Now, as someone who fully embraces the holiday season, my nightstand is always full of books covered with Santas and reindeer, all to the amusement of my children. However, if you are less inclined to share your holiday obsession, there are some feel-good reads that may involve all of those cozy Christmas elements, but they aren't just about presents and twinkly lights. You might consider Landline by Rainbow Rowell, which is set at Christmas time and has a sci-fi element to it. Or maybe Monica McInerney's Hello from the Gillespies, which is the opening salutation to a family's Christmas letter. These are less Christmas-centric, but still provide the necessary festive feels. Give it a try, and you may end up enjoying yourself more than you think. No sweat, because we're of the opinion that it should be Christmas every day.
You know, that's a great idea. You know, you can just have a book, can't you? You don't have to have decorations up. You can have a book that you read every night. It'll give you a little bit of that Christmas buzz. One I'd like to add to that, actually, is Family Trees by Aurelio O'Brien. I talked about it Christmas 2021, and it's a lovely book. But what's good about it is it's set throughout the year. It's like a whole year, and then it ends at Christmas. So, yeah. That's another one to add to the list there that Bob gave us. Of course, if you like reading, you'll probably want to go out and grab a copy of Thursday Night's Alright by Jack Andrews, only available on Kindle and full of swearing. I want to say a massive thank you to Bob for that. And also, I want to mention the fact that someone, the beautiful Shelley Arnold, she sent in an idea for Christmas Every Day. So why don't you, I'm talking to you, dear listener, do the same thing. Send us an email to tell us what you do or what you could do to keep Christmas alive throughout the year. So yeah, Bob will be back again in the next episode. I know that for a fact because he's already sent me the audio clips. He's on top of his game, that boy. I tell you, talk about efficient. No wonder he's the mayor of Trout Valley, because that man, he knows what he's doing. Thanks again, Bob. Now it's time for this. What the Dickens? This episode, I've got a couple of really interesting things we're going to talk about, and is something that I only noticed this year, and I'll be interested to see if anyone out there had ever thought about these things. Certainly, you'd have to read the book to be aware of one of the things. So first up, I'm going to play a clip from the audiobook. Tell you a sad story. So I don't know if you remember, years ago, I'd mentioned about Scott Newman, host of Christmas Morning Podcast. He was talking about his favourite version of the audiobook of A Christmas Carol is the one read by Tim Curry. And when I first started this segment, in honour of my dear friend Scott, I used the audiobook version. The clips I'd use, I'd get them from the Tim Curry version. And then someone, I guess YouTube obviously, got rid of that version off of YouTube. So I'd started using some random version, which I actually got an email from Scott saying he didn't like it. Fair enough, Scott. We know you love Tim Curry version. Anyway, just before Christmas, when I did What the Dickens segment, I noticed they had it back on there, the Tim Curry version. So I used Tim Curry that time. Went on there today. They've kicked it off again, haven't they? So again, I've got to go back to the old rando version. Before I play the first clip, I just want to say both of the bits I'm going to be talking about today are two of the ladies mentioned in the book, and it'll be really interesting to see what you think when you actually hear what I've got to talk about. So this first clip is quite a long one, so you'll have to forgive me for that, but here it comes. I'll see you at the end of the clip.
For again Scrooge saw himself. He was older now, a man in the prime of his life. His face had not the harsh and rigid lines of later years, but it had begun to wear the signs of care and avarice. There was an eager, greedy, restless motion in the eye, which showed the passion that had taken root, and where the shadow of the growing tree would fall. He was not alone, but sat by the side of a fair young girl in a mourning dress, in whose eyes there were tears, which sparkled in the light that shone out of the ghost of Christmas past. "It matters little," she said softly. "To you, very little. Another idol has displaced me, and if it can give cheer and comfort you in time to come, as I would have tried to do, I have no just cause to grieve."
"What idol has displaced you?" he rejoined.
"A golden one."
"This is the even-handed dealing of the world," he said. "There is nothing on which it is so hard as poverty, and there is nothing it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth."
"You fear the world too much," she answered gently. "All your other hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one until the master passion, gain, engrosses you. Have I not?"
"What then?" he retorted. "Even if I have grown so much wiser, what then? I am not changed towards you."
She shook her head.
"Am I?"
"Our contract is an old one. It was made when we were both poor and content to be so, until in good season we could improve our worldly fortune by a patient industry. You are changed. When it was made, you were another man."
"I was a boy," he said impatiently.
"Your own feeling tells you that you are not what you are," she returned. "I am. That which promised happiness when we were one in heart is fraught with misery now that we are two. How often and how keenly I have thought of this, I will not say. It is enough that I have thought of it and can release you."
"Have I ever sought release?"
"In words, no, never."
"In what then?"
"In a changed nature, in an altered spirit, in another atmosphere of life, another hope as its great end, in everything that made my love of any worth or value in your sight. If this had never been between us," said the girl, looking mildly but with steadiness upon him, "tell me, would you seek me out and try to win me now?" "Ah, no."
He seemed to yield to the justice of this supposition in spite of himself, but he said with a struggle, "You think not?"
"I would gladly think otherwise if I could," she answered. "Heaven knows. When I have learned a truth like this, I know how strong and irresistible it must be. But if you were free today, tomorrow, yesterday, can even I believe that you would choose a dowerless girl? You who, in your very confidence with her, weigh everything by gain? Or choosing her, if for a moment you were false enough to your one guiding principle to do so, do I not know that your repentance and regret would surely follow? I do, and I release you, with a full heart, for the love of him you once were."
So there are a few bits I want to touch upon in that scene, and they're all connected. So the first one is where it says that she was wearing mourning dress, suggesting that she was mourning the death of someone. The second bit is where she says, "Our contract is an old one." And then later on she says, "And I release you." And then the last bit is where she says, "If you were free today, tomorrow, yesterday, can even I believe that you would choose a dowerless girl?" Now, a dowry was the money that a woman's father would put forward when she got married to the husband. And I think this is often overlooked and ignored. But what it's saying is, Belle's parents have died, and now she has no dowry. She's been left penniless. I think what this is saying, that this scene is much worse than we think. It's not just that they've fallen out of love with each other. Her parents have died, and now she's been left penniless, and she has no dowry to take towards their wedding. And the fact that she says, "Our contract was an old one, and I release you," is actually referring to the fact that back in Victorian times, you could actually sue someone for breach of contract if you had agreed to get married. And she's saying that she wouldn't sue him and she'll release him and he can go about his merry way, when really, if they didn't get married, she would actually be able to sue him. And I've been through looking at the various different versions of A Christmas Carol, like the major ones, and there's only one of those where she is actually wearing mourning clothes, where she's wearing a mourning dress, and that is the Jim Carrey version, where Robin Wright plays Belle. So I found that really interesting. and I can't remember when it suddenly sprung to my mind that this was the situation. It's not just, like I say, that they've fallen out of love. It's so much more than that. Now she has got no money and nothing to bring to their relationship. And so that's one more reason why Scrooge wouldn't want to go ahead and get married to her. So, yeah, I don't think I'm reading too deeply into that either. I think that is actually what Dickens was trying to say in that scene. Now, the next one, I have to admit, I think is a lot more conjecture on my part. I'm going to play the two clips for you now. They're a lot shorter than the last one, so here comes the first one.
Scrooge's niece was not one of the blind man's buff party, but was made comfortable with a large chair and a footstool in a snug corner, where the ghost and Scrooge were close behind her. But she joined in the forfeits and loved her love to admiration with all the letters of the alphabet.
Okay, that was our first clip. Now have a listen to this. This is our second clip.
In the afternoon, he turned his steps towards his nephew's house. He passed the door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock. But he made a dash and did it. "Is your master at home, my dear?" said Scrooge to the girl. "Nice girl, very."
"Yes, sir."
"Where is he, my love?" said Scrooge.
"He's in the dining room, sir, along with his mistress. I'll show you upstairs, if you please."
"Thank ye. He knows me," said Scrooge, with his hand already on the dining room lock. "I'll go in here, my dear." He turned it gently and sidled his face in around the door. They were looking at the table, which was spread out in great array, for these young housekeepers are always nervous on such points and like to see that everything is right. Fred, said Scrooge. Dear heart alive, how his niece by marriage started! Scrooge had forgotten, for the moment, about her sitting in the corner with the footstool, or he wouldn't have done it, on any account.
So, like I said earlier, this only occurred to me this year. Now, I was always familiar with the bit where it says that Scrooge's niece sat out during Blind Man's Buff, and I never really sort of twigged why that could be. It just never really sort of crossed my mind much. I just sort of thought, oh, maybe she just didn't want to get involved, but she enjoyed watching. But then this year, I noticed the line later on where it says Scrooge had forgotten for the moment about her sitting in the corner with the footstool. And I'm going to cut to the chase. What I think Dickens was saying was that Scrooge's niece, Fred's wife, was pregnant. That's what I think. Those are the only two lines we have that suggest she was or is. Why else would it say it? You know, I can understand she maybe wanted to sit out. That could be any reason. It said that she joined in the other games, but she just didn't join in with Blind Man's Buff. And I'm wondering maybe because that's a bit rambunctious. But it says, dear heart alive, how his niece by marriage started. Scrooge had forgotten for the moment about her sitting in the corner with the footstool, or he wouldn't have done it on any account. And that suggests that he was aware of her condition, suggesting that she was pregnant. Now, I don't know if any of you out there have ever thought about this before. I had a good search on the internet trying to find other people to corroborate what I was thinking. And a couple of people did suggest that, yeah, she is pregnant. The book I've got that I frequently refer to, The Annotated Christmas Carol, I thought would have something in there about it. It did not. There was no mention of it at all, and that bothered me a little bit, and I'm thinking I might even email the chap that wrote the book, if I can find him, just to see if he's ever considered that. But I really think that that's what's going on there. Why else would those two lines be in the book? What else could they mean? I'd love to know your thoughts on it, but I thought it's something I really wanted to talk about. So there we go, boys and girls. That's this episode's What the Dickens. Do you know what? While I'm here, why don't I treat you to one more thing? This is just a little aside, and it goes back to the first clip I played of Scrooge's niece, and it says, but she joined in the forfeits and loved her love to admiration with all the letters of the alphabet. And that is actually referring to another parlour game, and this game is often called I Love My Love with an A. I think there are different ways to play it, but the version I found online, I'll read out the rules to you. So the goal is to recall and add to a growing alphabetical list of words. And the first player says, I love my love with an A because she is. And then you complete the sentence with an adjective that begins with the letter A. For example, artistic. So it would be, I love my love with an A because she is artistic. The second player then repeats this sentence but adds in another. It's a bit like I was going to grandma's house. Is that what it's called? There's another one, isn't there? I went to grandma's house and I took an apple. I went to grandma's house and I took an apple and a bull. I went to grandma's house, I took an apple, a bull, and a bottle of whiskey because my grandmother is boring and I need something to get through the afternoon with my grandmother. That is no way to speak about your grandmother. Right, where was I? Oh, yeah. So anyway, Each line you add another letter of the alphabet, so it would go on like, I love my love with an A, B, C, D and E because she is astonishing, bright, cute, delightful and eagle-eyed. So that's just an example, and there are ways to extend it as well, mentioned in this bit I've been reading online. Players can also make the game more difficult by requiring players to find adjectives for any number of additional categories, such as a name or location, or even requiring adverbs to precede the adjectives. For example, I love my love with an A because she is adoringly artistic, her name is Amber, and she lives in Atlanta. We went on vacation in Albany and I gave her an anklet. So there you go. And at the very end of that, it says another version of this game is The Minister's Cat. And that is the game that they play in the Albert Finney version of A Christmas Carol, the musical one from 1970. Yeah, they play The Minister's Cat when they could have played I love my love with an A. So there you go. Thought I'd add that for you. Bit more bang for your buck, you lucky people. Now let's move on to this. I hate to say it, boys and girls, but I don't have a recommendation this week. Normally, I like to give you a podcast to listen to or maybe a TV show, but I've been watching the same old... Actually, I'll tell you what, I've been watching the new... It's not even the new series, actually. I forgot it was out there. Curb Your Enthusiasm, Series 11. I think it could possibly be my favourite TV show of all time. It's been going since the year 2000. Do you know that? I didn't become aware of it till about 2005. Tell you what happened. I saw maybe a 15-second clip of this TV show. Can't even remember where it was on. I think they were advertising like a Sky satellite channel, and they had one clip of this show and it said Curb Your Enthusiasm, like they had it on Sky. And I'm thinking, I should look into that. And back, that was when me and Carla first started dating, actually. I think that was the first Christmas we were together. She said, what would you like for Christmas? So I said, could you get me a DVD set of Curb Your Enthusiasm? Got it, loved it, and I've loved it ever since. So yeah, I've got all the old episodes on DVD, apart from the latest series, Series 11. But the new series is coming out fairly soon, I'm led to believe. But that's what we're doing at the moment. Yeah, the last couple of nights we've been watching Series 11 of Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David. He was one of the original creators and writers of Seinfeld. And if you've never watched it, well, you're in for a treat, I believe. It's, like I say, probably my favourite TV show. So yeah, if you've not heard of it and you've never watched it, that's this episode's recommendation, Curb Your Enthusiasm. If you have watched it, go and watch it again. I think you'll enjoy the old episodes and the new ones. Yeah. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. Quite a short one, actually. I know the ones coming up to Christmas were getting longer and longer. And then even the last episode was quite long. But this one, a little bit shorter. But there you go. I do try to keep it less than an hour normally, but I seem to fail to do that for a lot of last year, but shorter one this time. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. If you want to get in touch, I'd love to hear from you. Send me an email at totalchristmas@gmail.com. You can go on the website, that's totalchristmaspodcast.com. And please do send in your ideas for Bob Baker for his segment on Christmas Every Day of ways to keep Christmas alive throughout the year. Like I said, I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Happy Christmas.
Look, I don't want to ruin your Christmas Eve. You don't have to listen to this.
It's okay. I like the company.
So how about some food? Shall I make us a little Christmas fettuccine?